Our topic this afternoon is Planned Parenthood, the legacy of murder, death, and immorality. And our text is Proverbs 8:36. Those who hate me love death. Those who hate God, the Holy Spirit says, love death. And my primary resource or source is going to be a book I highly recommend to people. And I don't know if it's still in print, but I would think it is, called Grand Illusions, The Legacy of Planned Parenthood by George Grant. An excellent book that every evangelical church should have in our library and every Christian ought to read at least once that lives in the United States especially. One of the largest and most respected social service organizations in the United States of America is Planned Parenthood. This organization receives large amounts of taxpayer funds from the civil government and is a darling of the left and radical feminists. The Obama administration, through their health care reform legislation, and what they would like to do is basically take the philosophy of Planned Parenthood and have it thoroughly entrenched in all the public schools, thoroughly entrenched and forced upon all insurance companies. So it's an important topic. It is also the greatest abortion provider in this nation. The greatest abortion provider in the United States is Planned Parenthood. Excuse me. Before we look at Planned Parenthood, from a biblical and historical perspective, we should note the following. First, Planned Parenthood is not a single monolithic organization. But rather is a loose affiliation of hundreds of organizations that share a common worldview and ethic. They have the same worldview, they have the same ethic, they have the same purpose. They pay affiliation dues to a central bureaucracy, and all team up together for political, financial, and judicial activities. So when you see the president of Planned Parenthood, there's an organization, there's leadership. They hire lawyers. Their job is to basically force the courts to go their way and to force their worldview, their ethic upon the American people. Planned Parenthood is by far the largest, the oldest, and the most organized provider of abortion and birth control services in the world. It is a huge business, and we must not forget that it is a business. Abortion is they make an incredible amount of money. I would have to say it's probably a $1 billion business. Abortions are not free. The propaganda arm and the political arm are not benevolent operations concerned for women's health. That's what they want you to believe. It's simply not true. How can they, when they kill so many women or so many females through abortion? Hundreds of thousands of women are murdered every year by people who are in total agreement with Planned Parenthood. How can they care for women when probably the number one thing causing breast cancer in the United States among women is abortion? If they loved women, if they cared about women, they would immediately ban all abortions, stop aborting babies, and this would be a wonderful thing, but they're not going to do that. Their operations are designed to keep the money flowing into the hands of the murderers. George Grant, writing in 1988, gives us the shocking statistics of abortion. Since its decriminalization 20 years ago, okay, the book's dated, it's been longer now, abortion has grown into a $500 million a year industry in the United States and an estimated $10 billion a year worldwide. More than 120,000 women each day, almost 50 million per year, That number, by the way, and this is worldwide, 50 million a year. That number, by the way, is the number of all the people killed. This is an estimate by historians. All the people killed in all of World War II, civilian and soldiers, in the Pacific and the European theater. 50 million. So 6 years of World War, what Hitler did and the Japanese did, and 6 years of war, abortionists doing one each and every year. That's shocking to think about. So 15 million a year, I mean, a number of people killed, 50 million, resort to abortion, with 150 women each day, almost 50 million per year, resort to abortion, and also to its birth control subsidiaries. It has become the most frequently performed surgical operation. The most frequently performed surgical operation is to murder somebody. So whatever happened to the Hippocratic Oath? Now, I don't believe in taking Greek oaths, but it certainly violates thou shalt not commit murder. The Hippocratic Oath, by the way, is that the doctor's job is to protect human life and to nurture human life, not to butcher it. Second, Planned Parenthood, according to their own assessment and their left-wing allies' propaganda, is a wonderful organization concerned for women and children's health. Well, this is the view of feminists, the news media, and of course the Democratic Party. By the way, if you vote for a Democrat, you should be disciplined by your church. If you continue to vote for Democrats, you should be excommunicated by your church if you're a Christian. The Democratic Party, which approves of partial birth abortion and homosexual rights, is so clearly anti-biblical that anybody who votes for a Democrat should be excommunicated. While this is the view of the news media, the Democratic Party, and the feminists, we must not be fooled by satanic lies. Planned Parenthood is rooted in the philosophy of secular humanism. This is the worldview that rejects the infinite personal God of the Bible and adopts human autonomy and ethics. Consequently, it has no problem whatsoever promoting fornication, adultery, sexual perversion, and the wholesale slaughter of unborn babies. It has no problem making money from butchering, dismembering, or burning with chemicals helpless little babies solely because they have been arbitrarily defined as lumps of flesh. They're not considered human beings. They're not considered to be human life. They're treated no different than a tumor that has to be removed by a surgeon. And when you take into account the fact that they have brains, they have spinal cords, they feel pain, they have all the genetics of a human, they have their own heart beating and so forth, such a view is clearly unscientific and obviously unscriptural. It philosophically and ethically is on the same level as the SS officers and death guards who ran the death camps at Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen. I'm serious. Ethically, morally, the people who run Planned Parenthood, who give money to Planned Parenthood, who advocate Planned Parenthood, are no different than the SS guards at the death camp at Auschwitz. That's true. How many people did the Germans kill in the death camps? 9 million? You include Christians and gypsies and so forth, maybe a high estimate, maybe 11 million. Well, in the United States alone, 50 million babies have died. So they've killed almost five times as much, at least five times as much as the death, the SS murderers. The Nazis defined the Jew as a non-human or a subhuman. And thus they killed millions of Jews like vermin. Now, if you've ever watched these World War II documentaries, they've shown actual footage, the propaganda films put out by the Nazis, and they'll show rats, spreading disease, and then they'll show pictures of Jews. Basically, they're saying that rats and Jews are the same thing on society. Well, the Planned Parenthood people, the people that kill the babies, babies are no different than a rat. They're a nuisance. They need to be eliminated. They need to be killed and thrown into a dumpster. Virtually everyone recognizes that the Nazi extermination of 6 million Jews was one of the most evil, vile, despicable acts of human history. Well, Planned Parenthood and their secular humanistic comrades have helped murder over 50 million babies in the United States since 1973, when the Supreme Court ruled that unborn babies could be regarded as vermin for the gas chamber. Those who believe that comparisons with the Nazi Holocaust are extreme or inappropriate, to those, we would ask such people to watch a video of a partial birth abortion, where a full-term baby has the base of its skull sliced open and its brain sucked out. And what they do is they manipulate the baby and they pull the baby out legs first, and they leave the head barely inside the womb. So technically, they can say it's still inside the mother, so they can kill it. If they pull it out of the mother, it would be illegal to kill it. So they leave the head inside, and then they slice the back of the head open, and they suck out the brain, collapse the skull, and they pull it out. Or go look into a dumpster behind an abortion clinic. Listen to what George Grant found when he climbed into such a dumpster. He's been active in the anti-abortion movement for a long time, and he's got some good experience here. Listen to what he says, quote, "I took a deep breath. I climbed into the bin. The stench was overwhelming. Rotten fruit, stale tobacco, fetid beer, and hospital astringent assaulted my senses. Bile rose up like a knot in my throat. But the sight was worse even than the smell. It was horrid. A scene like a ballad come to life. A ballad composed about the tragic events in some border hell. Several garbage bags had spilled their contents into the open van. Mixed with empty Coke cans, fast food wrappers, cigarette butts, and office litter were bundles of surgical gauze and laminaria matted with blood. And wrapped in those bundles were the broken bodies of several dozen children. Dismembered arms and legs, crushed skulls, mutilated corpses, unseeing eyes. The leering look of death was all around me. They tell me that comparisons with the Nazi Holocaust are inappropriate. Hyperbole, they say. Apparently such people have never been inside this dumpster. Their comprehension of the abortion issue is theoretical, it is political, it is sociological. But this dumpster is as inescapable as Auschwitz. Its evidence is irrefutable, as damnable. I reached across the carnage and opened one of the plastic bags. Even with all that I'd seen thus far, I was entirely unprepared for this. There were no bloody limbs. There were no brutal decapitations. There were no broken spines, disemboweled bodies, or shredded extremities. Instead, what I saw in this bag was a perfect baby. Whole, unblemished, brown-haired, and olive-skinned. The sort of child you'd make silly faces at through the maternity ward window. The sort of child you'd expect to see in a bassinet snuggled into a fluffy pink blanket. I caught my breath, stunned. The Greek gods toss men like dice, invoking spirits from the vast deep or calling up enormities from earth and elements. They made a rude fetish of cruelty. Their diabolism knew no bounds. But even they would have strained to conjecture a decadence as ugly as this. I lightly brushed the child's cheek with the back of my hand and marveled at the delicacy of life. Like hymning angels' chime, I whispered a prayer, and tears fell from my eyes like rain. Just then I heard the security guard coming. I bundled up the child in her crude little plastic sarcophagus and made my mad dash to safety. End of quote. Now, before I was a Christian, I knew a young lady, Italian lady, and she worked at an abortion clinic. And she was the people that stood there and assisted the doctors during abortion. Now, this lady was a total pagan. She took drugs. She was an atheist, hardcore atheist. She was a hardcore leftist. And yet, she said, the things that I saw while the doctors were doing the abortions sickened me. She said they were grotesque. And she could sense the great immorality of what was going on. Here's an atheist saying this. She could sense the great immorality of what was going on, watching babies being dismembered and butchered. This is the legacy of Planned Parenthood. Now, the reason I bring up secular humanism, the extreme horrifying nature of abortion and the Holocaust, excuse me, is to emphasize the maxim that beliefs or worldviews have consequences. The abortion debate is really only the tip of the iceberg. Abortion is a sign. Just like the widespread acceptance of homosexual practice in the West. That Europe and America have rejected the Bible. They've rejected God. They've rejected Jesus Christ. They've rejected the Christian worldview. They've rejected Christian morality for arbitrary, humanistic, positivistic law. The positivistic law simply means that it's purely arbitrary, that men can make up whatever they want. In California, they could have a vote. In California, they have these things where whatever the majority of people say will become law. So theoretically, in California, they could say that people can have sex with dogs and cats. And if a majority of people were in favor of it, it would be perfectly legal. It is legal in Oregon, by the way. Now think about the importance of the Christian worldview for a moment. If a secular humanist assert we evolved by chance from pond scum in a purely materialistic universe that exists without reason or meaning, they will end in an icy death or a ball of fire. Then why not kill unborn babies? Why not? Why bother getting married if you want to have sex? Why bother? Why bother telling the truth? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You see, and this is taught in the public schools. And then people wonder why more and more people are having children out of wedlock. People are wondering why more and more people just delay getting married until they're much later or don't get married at all. People wonder why more and more people are cheating on their tests and cheating on the SAT scores and cheating at business and lying in Wall Street. People want to wonder why are so many abortions taking place where women, where mothers murder their own children in cold blood. Why? Because they've abandoned the biblical worldview and adopted a secular humanistic ethic. You see, if there's nothing transcendent above and beyond this universe, and there is no final judgment or ethical accountability by an infinite personal God, then whether you kill 50 million babies or 6 million Jews, it does not matter at all. It doesn't really matter. Eventually the sun's going to supernova and everything's going to burn up and it's going to be as though you never even existed. Whether you were Mother Teresa or Adolf Hitler or Billy Graham or Charles Manson or the greatest saint like the Apostle Paul on earth does not matter if God doesn't exist. In the secular humanistic worldview, the difference between the Nazi extermination squads and the work of the Red Cross is only one of personal opinion. Now, on the surface, such a statement seems completely absurd. And because we are created in the image of God and have the work of the law written on the heart, most people would find this statement insane. But the secular humanist has no reason whatsoever based on his own worldview to refute such a statement. 50 years ago, homosexuality was universally condemned as despicable, disgusting, perverted, vile, evil behavior. Today, the vast majority of people, I wouldn't say the vast majority, the majority of young people, and certainly the political elites and the elites that run the Hollywood, think it's a virtue. They think it's wonderful. And they go out of their way to put sodomites and perverts in their TV shows and so forth, or in politics. All because ethics to them are arbitrary. Ethics are evolving. Ethics change. For them, moral laws are relativistic, arbitrary, evolving, and positivistic. Abortion is the fruit of secular humanism and relativistic ethics. And such a non-fixed evolving ethic that has absolutely no foundation whatsoever will eventually lead to infanticide. And it already has in some countries. And you can go to so-called respectable medical journals and read articles in favor of infanticide today. Now keep in mind that partial birth abortion and the allowing of aborted babies who survive to die is already legal. It's already legal. And note, when President Obama was a state senator in Illinois, he voted in favor of a bill which allows living aborted babies to be killed by the doctor. The so-called botched abortion. Let it die! That's our so-called compassionate president. He talks about compassion all the time. Oh, I care about the middle class. I care about women and children. He's a liar. He's an evil man who believes it's okay to murder children, to murder babies. Such thinking will lead to euthanasia, that is, the killing of senior citizens. When the state or a panel of doctors decide that such a life is not worth living anymore, that's already occurring in European countries. Oregon passed a bill allowing people to be killed. So the road from the medical death chambers to death camps is a logical one. It's a logical one. Third, Planned Parenthood deceives the masses through a few clever lies. Their first major deception is that they are a pro-choice organization. We're here for women's rights. Don't you care about women? Okay, recently when some Republicans complained that the health care bureau was going to pay for abortions and so forth. Well, their thing is, oh, well, no, we care for women's rights. We want women to have choice. They essentially argue that they are neutral and want women to have every option available to them. And they couch their propaganda with talk of freedom, rights, liberties, and so on. But the truth is the exact opposite. They want women to get abortions, and they would like to use state coercion whenever they can to promote abortions. You see, they hate God. They love death. Here are some of the things that they have promoted in the 20th century. Number one, compulsory abortion for out-of-wedlock pregnancies. Number two, federal entitlement payments designed to encourage more abortions. Three, compulsory sterilization for those who have had two children. Now, a lot of these things were a long time ago, but these were things that they were in favor of. Four, tax penalties on existing large families to discourage people having large families. Five, Planned Parenthood encouraged contraception, abortion, and sterilization, especially in minority communities. As we're going to see, the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, was a hardcore racist, and their policies were racist for decades. get rid of the blacks, get rid of the Puerto Ricans, get rid of the Jews, promote whites. That was their policy. Grant notes that, quote, draconian measures have been implemented at Planned Parenthood, at Planned Parenthood's behest, in dozens of countries throughout the Third World, providing many of these countries with detailed restraints and quotas, suggesting compulsory incentives and disincentives, and assisting in circumventing public opinion and moral opposition. Planned Parenthood has taken the lead in international campaign to crush the rights of women to choose if and when they will have children. There is no neutrality. Planned Parenthood is not free choice. Planned Parenthood is anti-Christ, anti-Christian, anti-morality, and pro-death. Number 8. In the United States, they actively support the rights of a woman to kill her unborn baby without the father's permission. And that's true in many states. The father has no say. If a girlfriend or a wife or whatever gets pregnant and she wants to murder the baby, and the father says, no, I don't want it to happen, too bad. Too bad. Number 9. They have used the state to actively suppress anti-abortion crisis pregnancy centers, both on advertising and even their location. They want a monopoly on counseling, lobbying, advertising, and the soliciting of pregnant women. They've worked for a monopoly. And they use the coercive power of the state, their leftist buddies, to persecute Christian organizations. Now, what are the horrible things that these crisis pregnancy centers are doing? Well, offering women a place to stay, encouraging them to not murder their baby, but to go ahead and have it and put it up for adoption, providing them food and clothing, providing them good Christian counseling. Oh, these crisis pregnancy centers, they're so evil, aren't they? Look what they're doing. They're helping women. They're helping babies. They're preserving life. And Planned Parenthood wants to stamp that out because they want more abortions. Because then they can make more money. Number 10. They vigorously oppose politicians' advertising campaigns as well as private groups who want people to see what an abortion does to a baby. Okay, if you talk about free choice, wouldn't it be good for a woman to know what actually happens in an abortion? Wouldn't it be good to know what happens to a baby, an unborn baby in an abortion? Wouldn't it be good? If you really want to make an informed decision, wouldn't you want to know? What does the fetus or unborn baby look like? What does an abortion do to a baby? And they go out of their way and they do everything they can and they pressure and they use all their influence to stop people from finding that out. Because the picture is not pretty, beloved. The picture reminds me of Auschwitz and Mengele, the death camp doctor who tortured and did experiments on people. It's very disgusting and sick what abortion does to a baby. They want to squash that. Why? It's bad for business. It's bad for business. Plus you see, hey, that's not some tumor. That's not some lump of flesh. There's little hands and feet. There's a head. There's eyes and nose. There's ears. That's a real baby. That's a human being. What are we doing slicing it up and murdering it? They also vigorously oppose laws that require a waiting period before an abortion, or that requires a woman contemplating abortion to look at a sonogram to see what she is about to kill. Now, if I was out hunting and there were a couple of shacks and a big, beautiful buck walked into a shack by mistake and was in a shack, but there was another shack next to it that might have some human beings in it, and I'm not sure which one is which, you think I might want to take a step back and find out before I possibly kill a human being? They don't want people to know. They don't want people to see that beating heart, that little baby that has hands and feet within them. They just want them to go ahead, just kill the dang thing and let's put it in a dumpster, out of sight, out of mind. They are not interested in the truth about human life, because that would decrease the number of abortions and the number of dollars in their pockets. Number 11. 95% of women counseled at Planned Parenthood said that their counselors gave virtually no biological information about the unborn baby that the abortion was about to destroy. 80% said they received no information about the health risks associated with their surgery. 80%! And there are lots of health risks associated with surgery. 89% said that the counseling they received was very strongly in favor of getting an abortion. 89%. Pro-choice is a propaganda term. That's all it is. It's propaganda. They are not pro-choice. They are pro-abortion. They are pro-death. They are pro-slaughter of innocent life. They do not want women to know about unborn babies. They do not want women to know the dangers, the risks of getting an abortion, which is a medical procedure, it's surgery. They do not want women to know the dangers of getting breast cancer if you get an abortion. The other great myth of Planned Parenthood is that they exist primarily to serve the needs of poor women and low-income families. Once again, the propaganda of the left recently, when the Republicans were simply opposed to taxpayer dollars going to pay for babies having their heads chopped off and murdered. Oh, they don't care about women. They don't care about poor people. Well, they want people to look at them as this great charitable organization, this great charitable institution. Anyone familiar with their history and their practices know that this is the exact opposite is true. From the beginning, Margaret Sanger, she's the founder, her philosophy is still enacted to this day. And her cohorts wanted to eliminate the underclass, especially blacks, Hispanics, and the mentally retarded. Or as we would say today, I don't know what they say today, handicapped, mentally challenged, because they perpetuate, quote, Margaret Sanger's own words, they perpetuate dependents, delinquents, and defectives. Get rid of them. We want white people. She wanted to greatly restrict the fertility of the lower classes and consider people who wanted to help them with charity as, quote, these are her words, not mine, benign imbeciles, who encourage the defective and diseased elements of humanity in their reckless and irresponsible swarming and spawning. End of quote. That's Margaret Sanger's own words. She wanted to get rid of blacks. She wanted to get rid of Puerto Ricans. She wanted people that were retarded to be sterilized. Following the founder's philosophy, which we're going to see later, is the exact same philosophy as the Nazi Party in the 1930s and 40s. Planned Parenthood has always sought to clean out the unwanted poor, the minorities, and the disadvantaged through contraception, sterilization, and abortion. Sanger's philosophy was, quote, more children from the fit, that is the white, educated, cultured classes, less from the unfit, and by that she means blacks, minorities, deformed, and mentally challenged people. Margaret Sanger was a racist elitist. She was a racist elitist. She said, quote, if we must have welfare, give it to the rich, not to the poor. End of quote. The eugenic racism of Sanger's philosophy permeates her policies. Now, while today they are, of course, much more subtle, they nevertheless still exist. And I remember back in the 90s, I believe it was, they had a black president, a black female president. Let's look at the historical legacy of Planned Parenthood briefly. This will tell you a lot about the organization. And you say, well, why is this important? This is important because, A, our money, our tax money is going to pay for this stuff. It'd be like your tax money going to the Nazi SS death camps. Our tax money is paying for this stuff, and our current president, the current administration, the Democratic Party, would like to incorporate Planned Parenthood and their philosophy into all the public schools and all the universities and colleges and all the insurance companies. They want this to be the worldview of the United States. They want this forced upon Christians in the United States. They want it forced upon the Roman Catholic Church. They want it forced upon the Mormons. They want it forced upon anybody who has a different ethic, a different view of the family, a different view of human life than they do. There is no neutrality. They want this to be forced on people through political coercion. Well, Planned Parenthood is the legacy of Margaret Sanger. To understand her and her positions, they will tell us a lot about how the people involved in Planned Parenthood think and function today. Margaret Sanger was born in upstate New York on September 14th, 1879. Her mother was a Roman Catholic, and her father was a radical socialist who hated religion, very much hated religion. The family was quite poor and suffered a lot of privation. Although her mother had her baptized in 1893, in secret, by the way, she feared that if the father would find out, she might get a beating or whatever. She eventually followed her father's beliefs and came to hate the Roman Catholic Church with a passion. Now, I hate the Roman Catholic Church with a passion myself, but that's because it's a satanic counterfeit form of Christianity. Okay, she hated all religion, anything to do with Christianity. She hated the God of the Bible. She hated Jesus Christ. She left home. She married William Sanger, an architect, and had three children. Through her husband's connection, she became involved in radical politics and attended socialist, anarchist, and communist meetings in Greenwich Village. Okay, Greenwich Village, for over a century, has been a hotbed of left-wing liberalism and socialism. She became thoroughly involved in current thought on rebellion and revolution. Okay, so she was your typical bohemian radical of the early 20th century. She would be like your Abby Hoffman in the 1960s, but in a much earlier era. The same kind of liberal scum that we have to deal with today. She even wrote for the socialist newspaper The Call. In the first decade of the 20th century, virtually every revolutionary left-wing nutcase group unified politically within the Socialist Party. Okay, the socialism was in. And all the left-wing nutcases all solidified around the Socialist Party. After a while, Sanger fell in with a radical utopian, Emma Goldman. Goldman was so radical, militant, and outspoken on a number of issues, Margaret's husband disapproved. Goldman was a popular speaker all over America. She preached Marxism, free love. Okay, if you want to have sex like a dog or a cat with anybody you want, just go ahead. Okay, the hippie movement of living a completely perverted antinomian lifestyle, the hippie movement goes way back. It's nothing new. It goes back to the Garden of Eden with Satan. Free love, the goodness of revolutionary violence, the great wickedness of capitalism, and the need for widespread birth control. And of course, with them, they mean widespread birth control for blacks, Hispanics, and so forth. At this time, Goldman made a living selling her own anarchist magazine, Mother Earth, and distributed leaflets advocating a liberal view of sexuality and conception. The birth control and this liberal view, go, of course, go together. If you're going to have sex with every guy under the sun and be a total whore, well, you want to be in favor of birth control now, don't you? Well, that was true then, it's true now. Over time, Sanger became obsessed with sex. She published a paper with the title, No Gods, No Masters. She denounced marriage. She denounced capitalism. She raged against sexual purity as, quote, obscene prudery. In her writing, she advocated that a rebel woman, quote, has a right to be lazy, the right to be an unmarried mother, the right to destroy, and the right to love. Okay, this is the founder of Planned Parenthood. This is the organization that's advocated as caring and concerned about families. They're anti-family. They're anti-Christian. They're anti-America, as America once was, not what it is now. These views are common today, but they were exceptionally radical in the early 20th century. These views are exceptionally radical. What was radical is now widespread accepted in our day. Her writings were deemed obscene and lascivious, and an arrest warrant was issued against her for violating the Comstock laws. Let me explain what the Comstock laws are. They came into being in 1873 in an attempt to stem the flood of pornographic magazines and postcards that were coming into the United States from Europe. Places like France, primarily a post-Roman Catholic secular nation, pornography was acceptable. During this time, she fled to the U.S. and became involved with the Malthusians, who were obsessed with fears of overpopulation. These people believe that if Western culture, and by Western culture, they mean white culture, white European culture, was to survive, the physically impaired, the mentally diseased, the racially inferior, the material poor, and the mentally challenged people had to be eliminated. We've got to get rid of them. Now, what's the Christian view of this? The Christian view is if we want to preserve a good culture, we need to preach Christ. We need to preach the whole counsel of God. We need to follow the dominion mandate, which is now fulfilled through obedience to Jesus Christ. That's what we need to do. Not kill people. Not encourage people to murder their children. Not encourage people to live like wild dogs in the forest and fornicate and act like beasts. The best way to avoid overpopulation, the Malthusian said, and save civilization, was by getting rid of the human debris. This is the way they talked. It was to promote contraception, sterilization, and abortion. Okay, this is very early. These radical ideas go way back. Margaret Sanger understood that if one was to advocate an anti-family, so-called free love lifestyle, one also had to advocate birth control and abortion. Okay, so the seeds of what took place in the 1960s and 70s, they go way back. They go way, way back. The sexual revolution of the 1960s was not really new, but was only being advocated around 50 years prior by socialist revolutionaries and sex perverts. The reason that the sexual revolution did not take off until the 1960s was not the invention of birth control in the early 60s, the birth control pill, but the fact that the apostasy in the mainline denominations of the 1920s and 30s took a full generation to corrupt the masses. I've talked to people, old liberals, they go to liberal churches, you know, people in their 80s and stuff, who attended liberal Presbyterian churches. And they would get these liberal guys would come in from the seminaries, and they would basically lie and deceive the people, and they'd get hired by these churches. And then they would slowly preach their liberalism. And then it took a whole generation for the people to come in line to where now in the PCUSA, you can be a sodomite, a lesbian, they'll make you a minister. You can be a transgender, they'll make you a minister. You can be living in open rebellion against God, an open sexual immorality, and you can be a minister. So it took a full generation to corrupt the masses. What was unthinkable to most Americans in the 1940s and 50s became fashionable by the late 60s and early 70s. It is for this reason that Margaret Sanger is a hero to modern secular humanists. They love her. They praise her. Now, they ignore all the radical racism and eugenics stuff. They ignore it. They pretend it's not there, and they worship her as a hero. In her rank unbelief, wickedness, and sexual perversion, she was ahead of her time in the United States, wasn't she? She was ahead of her time. Gloria Steinem and Barbara Streisand and the immoral sex perverts of our day, they would have got along with her just fine. Now, during her stay in England, she became a close friend of, let me read his name correctly, Havelock Ellis, the grandfather of the Bohemian sexual revolution. Ellis, who, by the way, was a complete degenerate sex pervert, instructed Sanger on the necessity to tone down her radical, shocking ideas for the sake of political expediency. Look, we agree on this stuff. We both believe in sexual perversion. We both believe in complete sexual immorality. We both believe that people ought to go out and fornicate all they want and have a good time and use birth control. You got to tone it down. Society's not ready for this yet. You got to tone it down if you want to make inroads into society. She understood that she would have to tone down her pro-abortion rhetoric and counter ideas with scientific terminology. The controversial speeches on anarchism and socialism would have to give way to the pseudoscience of Malthus and eugenics. Okay, so the radical socialism, we're going to tone that down. We're going to leave that out for a while. And, you know, this is a brilliant tactic. Now, and here's a lengthy quote by George Grant, just to give you an idea what's going on here, as far as the use of the science. Here's what he says, quote, Margaret Sanger was especially mesmerized by the scientific racism of Malthusian eugenics. Part of the attraction for her was surely personal. Her mentor and lover, Havelock Ellis, was a beloved disciple of Francis Galton, the brilliant cousin of Charles Darwin, who first systematized and popularized eugenic thought. Part of the attraction for her was also political. Virtually all of her socialist friends, lovers, and comrades were committed eugenicists as well, from the followers of Lenin in revolutionary socialism, like H.G. Wells, George Bernard Shaw, and Julius Hammer, to the followers of Hitler and National Socialism, like Ernest Rudin, Leon Whitney, and Harry Laughlin. But it wasn't simply sentiment or politics that drew Margaret into the eugenic fold. She was thoroughly convinced that the inferior races were in fact human weeds and a menace to civilization. Okay, he's quoting her, by the way, with those terms. She believed that social regeneration would only be possible as the, quote, sinister forces of the hordes of irresponsibility and imbecility were repulsed. She had come to regard organized charity to ethnic minorities and the poor as a symptom of a malignant social disease because it encouraged the prolificacy of, these are her words, defectives, delinquents, and dependents. She yearned for the end of the Christian reign of benevolence that the eugenic socialists promoted, when the choking human undergrowth of morons and imbeciles would be segregated and sterilized. And once again, he's quoting her. Her goal was, quote, to create a race of thoroughbreds by encouraging more children from the fit and less from the unfit. And the only way to achieve that goal, she realized, was through Malthusian eugenics. Thus, as she began to build the work of an American Birth Control League and ultimately of Planned Parenthood, Margaret relied heavily on the men, women, ideas, and resources of the eugenics movement. Virtually all of the organization's board were eugenicists. Financing for the early projects, from the opening of the birth control clinics to the publishing of the revolutionary literature, came from eugenicists. The speakers at the conferences, the authors of the literature, and the providers of the services were almost without exception avid eugenicists. And the international work of Planned Parenthood was originally housed in the offices of the Eugenics Society, while the organizations themselves were institutionally intertwined for years. The Birth Control Review, Margaret's magazine, and the immediate predecessor to Planned Parenthood Review, regularly and openly published the racist articles of Malthusian eugenicists. In 1920, it published a favorable review of Lautrop's, Stoddard's frightening book, The Rising Tide of Color Against the White World Supremacy. Okay, hear that again. The Rising Tide of Color Against the White World of Supremacy. The White World Supremacy. In 1923, the review editorized in favor of restricting immigration on a racial basis. In 1932, it outlined Margaret's plan for peace, calling for coercive sterilization, mandatory segregation, and rehabilitative concentration camps for all dysgenic stocks. In 1933, the Review published Eugenic Sterilization, an Urgent Need by Ernest Rudin, who was Hitler's director of genetic sterilization and a founder of the Nazi Society for Racial Hygiene. The Nazi Society for Racial Hygiene. And later that same year, it published an article by Leon Whitney entitled Selective Sterilization, which adamantly praised and defended the Third Reich's racial programs. The bottom line is that Planned Parenthood was self-consciously organized in part to promote the white and enforce white supremacy, like the Ku Klux Klan, the Nazi Party, and the Mensheviks. It has been from its inception implicitly and explicitly racist. And this racist orientation is all too evident in its various programs and initiatives, birth control clinics, the abortion crusade, and sterilization initiatives. End of quote. Now, she considered up to 70% of the population to be inferior in stock or condition. She regarded all non-Aryans, whether red, yellow, black, or white, to be noxious weeds. Okay, you know, like white trash, hillbillies, the people who are of inferior stock. She wanted to stop the Negroes, quote, reckless and irresponsible swarming and spawning. Okay, it's a thoroughly racist organization. After Sanger comes back to America, she uses her considerable communication skills and propaganda to combat the charges against her. The authorities dropped the charges against her, and the publicity only helped her demonic cause. She became famous. She fought, she won, now she's famous. Or I should say even more famous. She was already quite famous. She soon opened her first birth control clinic, in the Brownsville section of New York. It was an area primarily populated by Italians, Jews, Puerto Ricans, and Slavs. The clinic was closed by authorities after only a few weeks. Margaret and her sister were arrested and sentenced to a month in jail, in a workhouse, because they had distributed obscene materials and advocated dangerous medical procedures. This did not slow Sanger down. After being released, she organized the Birth Control League and started a new magazine, the Birth Control Review. Now, at this time, she was receiving a lot of public criticism by popular social conservatives such as Billy Sunday and Theodore Roosevelt. Such criticism only made her more famous. Now, these were people that were hated by the left, so the left just loved this. This would be like in the modern day, somebody being criticized by, let's say, Jerry Falwell. Leftists hate Christians. Made her more famous and popular with leftist intellectuals. Rich liberals donated money, and subscription to her magazine soared. She published a book that became a bestseller. She was known throughout the United States, and she was a very popular speaker desired throughout the whole world. So here's somebody who was advocating socialism, who was completely anti-capitalistic. Here's somebody who was advocating gross sexual immorality and the destruction of the family. Here's somebody advocating abortion and radicalized ideas connected with birth control being praised and becoming popular. By the way, in her first book, she advocated getting rid of human weeds, her words, the sterilization of inferior races, her words, blacks, Jews, Puerto Ricans, etc. She called for the segregation of morons, misfits, and the maladjusted. Those are her words. Her book was blatantly racist and totalitarian. And at the same time, eugenics and racism, but at the same time we have to understand that at this time in history, eugenics and racism were perfectly acceptable. America was a very racist country, and racism was acceptable. We have to say that. Now, of course, the Christian perspective, talking about letting people into the country and so, these kind of things, the question is not what their race is. The question is, what is their faith? What is their culture? What is their worldview? If we've got solid five-point Calvinist blacks from Africa and they want to come to America, hey, encourage them. Of course, today it might be better for them to stay there and witness to people in their countries, but encourage them. Statism was on the rise. People were not yet aware of what our ideas would lead to in the Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, and Red China, and later on in the United States, where there are thousands of murders of babies a day. The early publications of Sanger and her cohorts mirrored the Aryan white supremacist propaganda of the Nazis, the Nazi Party. Sanger was radically racist and wanted to make sure that the blacks, the Jewish and Hispanic population did not increase, but decreased. Decrease them. They're weeds. They're a drag on society. Sanger admired the Nazi eugenicists and even commissioned the director of the Nazi Medical Experimentation Department, Dr. Ernest Rudin, to write for the magazine, as we noted. That was an evil guy. Sanger, by the way, she wrote this book entitled Women in the New Race. In it she said, quote, "The most merciful thing a large family can do to one of its infinite members is to kill it." That's a quote. Quote, "The most merciful thing a large family can do to one of its infant members is to kill it." Sanger had the sexual ethic of a Larry Flint or a Desaad. Her ethic relating to the value of human life was on a level with Charles Manson or Adolf Eichmann. Her political beliefs were in accord with Lenin and Hitler. Her moral life as a person was one of habitual adultery, habitual affairs, multiple partners, both married and unmarried. Her first husband divorced her. Her second rich husband allowed her to lead a life of gross promiscuity and adultery. He didn't care. They kind of had an agreement. "I'm going to be a whore. I'm going to do what I want to do. You provide the money." She continued to grow sexual immorality even into old age, and by all accounts was a very unhappy person. By the late 1940s, she was addicted to drugs and alcohol. She was involved in the occult throughout most of her life. I mentioned in a sermon last week that the rise of rationalism leads to irrationalism. The rise of atheism and anti-supernaturalistic Christianity almost always leads to a resurgence in witchcraft and the occult. That's true in Europe, that's true in Canada, that's true in Australia, that's true in the United States. Her dependence deepened as she became older, her dependence on the occult. She became more and more into drugs, she became more and more into the occult. From a biblical perspective, she was completely dominated by her master, the devil. Her thinking, her life, her beliefs, her actions were satanic to the core. And this, beloved, is the hero of the Democratic Party. This, beloved, is the hero of the American left. This, beloved, is the hero of our media today. NBC, CBS, CNN, etc. This is the organization supported by taxpayer dollars. Sanger died in September 1966, only a week away from her 87th birthday. Her mission of spreading birth control and abortion was an amazing success. Her desire to kill off blacks and Hispanics through abortion would become a huge success after her death. In 1942, Sanger and her comrades came up with the name Planned Parenthood. They had been considering that name for years. This name set forth the idea to the public that this institution was a positive, family-oriented program, which is a complete lie. We are only here to help you and your family. That's what we're here for. We're here to help women. We're here to help children. We're here to help families. After the war, the Nazi atrocities and the American experimentation became public, as well as the atrocities of the death camps. The whole early history of Sanger and her movement would have to be hidden from the public to maintain respectability. Remember, here's a woman who was a complete racist who was close friends with several high-ranking Nazis. Virtually no one today, except Christians, know about Planned Parenthood's eugenic racist roots. Virtually no one knows about Sanger's socialist radical history. In addition, the anti-family, sexual perversion, promiscuity, sexual deviancy, and perversion aspect of the movement is ignored as well. Okay, now they're big in favor today of sexual education in the public school system. Sexual education in the public school system is designed to get children to fornicate and to be immoral. That's the design of it. The presupposition is that all children ought to be fornicating, all children ought to be sexually permissive, and we're going to help them do that without getting pregnant. And we're going to encourage promiscuity. That's why they hate abstinence movements, and they mock them and laugh at them. The worldview behind Sanger's movement is radically anti-Christian, radically anti-family. It is a racist worldview, a worldview that does not value human life, a worldview that rejects Christian morals and sexuality and views virtually any perversion as normal. Okay, they're pro-homosexual, big-time pro-homosexual. We have seen that the founder of Planned Parenthood was an evil, demonic person in every aspect of her worldview and life. Her worldview, her outlook, her goals are reflected in how Planned Parenthood has operated ever since her death. The organization is not only the number one abortion provider, that is the number one murderer of unborn babies, but it also vigorously defends the right to murder unborn babies in the courts. Its lobbying power and political muscle are substantial. The legacy of death and destruction of the innocent continues. Planned Parenthood also continues Sager's legacy of promiscuity, sexual immorality, and sexual perversion. She was a dedicated evangelist for free love, as they called it. This meant the full acceptance of premarital sex whenever one wanted to do it. Just use birth control. This included the premarital sex of teenage minors. Today, her organization openly advocates and endorses masturbation, premarital fornication, homosexual behavior, and sexual experimentation. It wants condoms handed out to minors. It advocates girls getting abortions without their parents' knowledge or consent. It wants the abortion pill sold over the counter to millions of minors, and so on. It regards conservative Christianity as the number one enemy and portrays people who talk about abstinence and waiting to get married to have sex as insane, dangerous Neanderthals, as complete ignorant fools. Just a few more minutes and then I'll have to stop. In her newspaper, The Woman Rebel, Margaret Sanger noted that, quote, birth control appeals to the advanced radical because it is calculated to undermine the authority of the Christian churches. I look forward to seeing humanity free someday from the tyranny of Christianity, no less than capitalism. Did you hear that? Here's what Grant writes. Today, Planned Parenthood is continuing her crusade against the church. In its advertisements, in its literature, in its programs, and in its policies, the organization makes every attempt to mock, belittle, and undermine biblical Christianity. End of quote. She speaks about the tyranny of Christianity, but what about the tyranny over the millions of helpless, innocent, unborn babies that have never done anything wrong, that are murdered? They've committed no sins or crimes. They're harmless, little unborn babies. And they have their little babies, their little bodies dismembered and tossed into a dumpster with the trash. What about the tyranny of the millions of teenage girls who are used for sex and get venereal diseases because of Planned Parenthood's demonic ethic? You see, socialists, sex perverts, atheists, and statists love to speak about freedom from God and His law. But in doing so, they embrace the slavery and tyranny of lawlessness, slavery to sin, slavery to the devil, slavery to status manipulators. The compassion of the wicked is cruel. And we'll have to stop there. Let us pray. Heavenly Father, we ask that you would bring revival to this nation, bring reformation to the church. That Christians would rise up and act like Christians. That Christians would stop hating your law. Professing Christians would start loving your law and applying it to culture and society. We pray, Lord, that you would raise up preachers who preach the whole counsel of God, including your holy law. And we pray, Lord, that you would pour out your wrath and indignation upon Planned Parenthood and their advocates and their allies and the Democratic Party. The blood of 50 million babies is on their hands. The blood of 50 million unborn children is on them. And you have promised in your law, Lord, to bring a curse upon those who do such things. And we ask you to obey your own law, which we know you do. In Jesus' name, amen.